Welcome to the Growth Enablement Madness podcast, and I'm Jim Ward, your host, CEO of BrainCell, the growth enablement company. I'm absolutely mad about helping businesses grow and scale. And in this podcast, my team and I get a chance to talk shop with industry thought leaders about a variety of growth enablement strategies, stories, and technology trends. I'm happy that you're here, so let's get the growth conversation started. Welcome. This is Jim Ward on the Growth Enablement Madness podcast. Great to have you all here again. I have a terrific guest today. Along with me, though, is my co-host, Sarah Reed. Hi, Sarah.
Hey, Jim. Good to be here.
And the producer, Connor O'Keefe, who you can't see, but he's in the background, so he won't say hi. But anyways, here we are. You know, we're crazy and mad about growth of companies and how to scale them. Our guest today is none other than John Case, CEO of Acumatica. Hey, John, how you doing?
Hey, good. Good to see both of you. Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, well, we've been looking forward to getting you into the podcast and glad that you're here. As you know, we're also new partners with Acumatica, so we're very excited.
I'm very happy that you are.
So I have some basic questions before we get going into the intricate details. Of course, I can look at your LinkedIn and see your past, and maybe you want to talk about that a little bit, but why don't you do that? Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and where you've come from, and then we'll get into some questions.
How far back do you want me to start?
I'm going to go with childhood. I'm thinking growing up, what was your passion and what was the career path that led you to Acumatica?
Oh, well, that's a long question. No, I mean, I grew up in Atlanta, Georgia, had a very happy, supportive, welcoming family. And my mother was a social worker. My dad designed pension plans for corporations like Coca-Cola and other companies in the Atlanta area, and ended up, you know, just being very interested in business because of him. My first, other than jobs like washing cars at the airport, my first real job was working for a company called J.D. Edwards. So I had a little bit of an introduction to vertical apps back when I was in college. But then leaving college, I ended up what was my passion? I was actually passionate, interesting problems. I loved kind of problems of businesses, problems of management, problems of opportunities of things to go do and fix and design. And so a lot of my career steps kind of took that path. I was a management consultant for a few years, helped corporations all over the world with all kinds of problems, went back to graduate school, it got an MBA, spent 17 years at Microsoft, and then was CEO of a different company for the last 5 years, a very different kind of business, one that actually specializes in enabling large corporations to run virtual meetings. Sold that company in 2021 and then ended up at Acumatica just a few months later. And so for me, it's, again, the path to working through those kinds of companies, that kind of experience, becoming a CEO, which is a very different kind of thing. But all of it kind of stemmed from this idea of I find the business world very interesting. I love working with real people on their real world problems. I find Acumatica to be very cleanly in that sweet spot. It's one of the things I really like about it.
That's awesome. And of course, the Microsoft background didn't hurt, I'm guessing.
Yeah, but I never worked in anything related to ERP or CRM in Microsoft.
Oh, you didn't?
No. I was in Microsoft Office. I was in Windows Server. I ran the .NET developer team for a while. So I was in very different parts of the company. So really, I didn't really become kind of exposed really to ERP till I was running it in my own company.
That's interesting.
We were an Acumatica customer. And that's one of the ways I kind of got connected to Acumatica in the first place.
Well, that's very interesting. You may or may not know that I was a founding partner way back with Ezekiel Steiner. That goes way back. And now we're back. And of course, very excited about this. I have my reasons why I'm excited about Acumatica. So I'm going to ask you a little more about Acumatica itself. Can you give us a high-level overview of Acumatica's cloud-based ERP software and how it differs from the other products in the marketplace?
That's a really good question. I think it's a very rich question also. I think we believe one of the fundamental differences is that we are a cloud-native architecture. We built that in the beginning. We are a SaaS business. We specialize in all the reasons that SaaS works for companies, everything from modern technology to future-proofing to keeping your data, you know, in a safe place, et cetera. All those benefits are there. So that's one big thing. Second big thing I think for us is that we really specialize in a certain customer size and demographic is what I like to call it. And so we're not building for, you know, massive trillion-dollar global corporations. We're building for small, medium enterprises. Okay. And I think it really separates us. A typical customer from us is 20, 30, 50, 100, maybe even 300, 400 employees. That's the zone. We think that we can build software that really makes the world better for that kind of company, for that kind of owner, for that kind of financial operator. And that's the second big thing is we build for that size, that company size. And the third big thing is, and we really have a great industry outlook, or like vertical, but we call it industry outlook. We have additions that are the vast majority of what we do with our customers and partners, specializing in things like construction, distribution, manufacturing, retail. We just announced another one, professional services, that we're going to launch in the upcoming months. And the whole point of that is to say, we're not only building for a certain company size, we're building for a certain specific company profile. So we can put things into our tools that are unique and specialized for that type of company. You're a North American manufacturer, a couple $100 million business. We have a perfect tool for you. That's how we got started. But really, that's catapulted forward in the last 3 or 4 years, that industry specific focus. So the cloud's the basis of it. But it's also about that, who we build for and what are the kinds of tools we're building and what's the specialization there.
So I know you've been architected purely for the web and the cloud, but do you allow on-premise?
We historically did, but that's not something we sell today. We allow hosting. There's a way, like certain regulated industries, things like that, you can do work on what we would call PCS, private cloud, either hosted by a partner or a third party, but we don't do on-prem anymore.
So if it was HIPAA, something like that, you might go private.
We have partners that can do that. We have partners that have a GovCloud. We have partners that can work in other regulated parts of the world. But no, we don't do on-prem.
Got it. You know, our vision as a partner is to help companies grow and scale. It's as simple as that. Can you tell me how Acumatica does that in manufacturing industries or the other segments you're talking about? What kinds of things does Acumatica do to improve scale, efficiencies, et cetera?
Yeah, and I think there's lots of dimensions to growth. And I think that's one of the reasons I was excited about kind of joining you and talking about this. I think the first thing we don't do is we don't put unnecessary licensing and obligations on the customer. Our licensing is not based on user base. You can have unlimited users in the kind of core product set. We license our technology based on transactions, on consumption effectively, the use of your system, as opposed to the number of people who are driving it. So as a company grows, as you add people, and you want more and more people to have access to data and sort of the rich set of intelligence that comes with your business management tool, we love that. That's what we want, number one. Number two, I actually think the cloud is a big part of that. I think part of the real nature in us being able to run, we run primarily in AWS. Running in AWS allows us to be very dynamic with resource allocation, clustering, you name it, failover, et cetera. So we can grow a customer very fast. Even seasonally, we can do tremendous things with growth that would allow people to kind of balance their resources without any need to change effectively their product that they own. And that's a big deal. The third thing I'd say we do is our tools are very much built, again, for that size of customer, but the complexity and the depth is there as companies grow and get more complex. Add locations, add countries, add divisions, add products, even do acquisitions. It's very easily integrated into the cloud architecture. And so the typical customer that has a very strong growth vision, we very much grow with that customer. And that's a big part of what we say in our marketing, in our selling, in our partner communications is, we'll grow with you. You start here, but everyone aspires to be a $1 billion business. We will grow with you. We have a whole set of customers that have done that. And we believe we'll be able to provide for them for as long as our companies exist.
Yeah. So let's go back to the licensing model, because most companies, I want to make sure the listeners understand that this is one of the differentiators. Most companies sell seats, right? And really, you're not governed by seats. You're governed by usage. Is that right?
That's exactly right. So when we founded the company, again, this predated me, but when the company was thinking about its initial wave of how they wanted to differentiate itself, the smart people here, our co-founders, had this great idea, which was to say, rather than price per seat and limit the way that a software like Acumatica can spread within a company, because it does provide a limit. You're always thinking about how many licenses, how many user IDs, logins I have. Instead, they say, no, look, we'll base this on transactions. We'll base this on how many invoices you're paying and how many suppliers you have and how many customers are buying from you. And as transactions get processed in the system, that's actually the basis for our licensing. So we grow as the company grows. If your business is getting bigger and you're adding new businesses, new suppliers, new inventory, whatever it happens to be, Acumatica grows with it. If you're flat, we're flat with it. You could add 10 new people to look at the data. We're not going to charge you for that at all. And the net result is you see customers where sometimes 80, 90, even 100% of the company is inside Acumatica working with the data, seeing what's relevant for their job. And they never have to worry about counting in that way.
Right. So how do you predict cost then with that kind of model?
Well, I think it should be based on your business projections. If you're a customer thinking about, my goal is to be $100 million next year, and then 150 the year after that, you have some form of a model that says, how many customers am I signing up and how many times are they buying per year? And like, I know when I was a customer, again, prior to Acumatica, that's the way we did it. We looked at our projected revenue, how many transactions we were driving, who are our suppliers. We had a model. And now even then we do it in tiers, right? So it's not like we charge you dynamically more every minute of the day or less or whatever. We look at it at the end of the year and we say, okay, you outgrew your transactions the following way. Let's make sure you're on the correct tier for the next year. Right. Okay. And it's not something that's a constant up or down toggle. It's much more like we're primarily 1 year contracts with auto renew, but we look at the resourcing level when we do it.
Yeah. So would you say that that's more cost effective in the marketplace versus the seat model?
First of all, I think it removes kind of false impediments to use of the system. Therefore, it becomes more predictable. It certainly becomes more of a strategic lever, right? So that's the first thing I'd say. Second thing I'd say is generally what we find is, yes, we are far more cost effective in the typical customer in that size I described. And we scale more cost effectively than a typical customer in that size. When they compare us to a big competitor, what they find often is, yeah, there's some interesting upfront discounts that happen, but once the licensing really settles in, Acumatica really saves us a lot of money. That's before you even factor in productivity gains and efficiency from having access to information. We find manufacturers that say, just by using Acumatica, we can save 20% on our inventory because we now have better predictability. Well, that cost savings is well beyond the software. And those kinds of things really matter to customers in those industries.
Well, since you brought up the four-letter word for me, which is inventory, I used to be in manufacturing, by the way, so I call it the four-letter word.
You know it better than I do, but it's something I'm learning a lot about. I think it's fascinating.
So when you say they're able to save, tell me a little bit about how. What did that company particularly experience?
Oh, that's great. So when people are using Acumatica for manufacturing, our manufacturing edition, and they're looking at the supply chain management tools, and they're looking at things like cost estimation tools and resource scheduling tools, et cetera, they can now much more efficiently and predictably understand what they have in inventory, what supplies are coming in, looking at it by SKU, by job, and they can realize they can often carry a lower level of inventory because the system is giving them hourly, daily data as opposed to waiting for the end of the month they were getting before and clearing all their books and saying, okay, where are we low? And yeah. A lot of inventory buying happens on gut feel, right? In certain companies.
Right.
You've seen that. I've seen that. But more and more, you can make it very predictable and specific and data-driven. Yeah. And that allows companies to do things and say, like, well, just by implementing the system and understanding our true levels of inventory and the jobs that are coming, we can carry less inventory in our warehouse, or we can reduce the number of orders we make from our suppliers, or whatever it happens to be that suits their purpose. It's a very typical story we hear from customers once they fully adopted the Acumatica system.
You know, I find, and I've been around in this industry for 30 years, I know you're going to probably say, how could that be? Because you look so young. I'm looking up and just making sure you felt that way. Sarah, nothing on that? Nothing on, you're just going to be quiet today? You're not going to laugh
I'm
for
sorry.
Me?
I'm sorry. No. I'm not doing my job.
All right. So I've been around a long time. And, you know, I still think ERP, cloud ERP is early stage in a sense.
No question.
Right. Whereas CRM, CX products have kind of crossed over the chasm and it's more commoditizing. So I think folks are still getting used to cloud ERP. There used to be fears about security with their financials. Tell me about how security works in the cloud. So to alleviate that fear from folks in the market.
Well, first of all, let me agree with the first thing you said, by the way, which is to say, I really do believe ERP is still just getting started when it comes to true use of the cloud.
Absolutely.
I think we are leading the way. You know, we call ourselves the cloud ERP very intentionally. That's a big part of our story and our mission. But I feel like the next 10 years are going to look very different. I mean, think about the changes happened in the last 10 years. The change in the next 10 years is going to be even greater. And so I think there's all kinds of reasons for that. One of the barriers historically to cloud adoption has been people want to understand the security model, and that's totally correct. But I think that there's multiple tiers to how you can think about that. One is, first of all, you know, we're building on a very secure cloud, which is Amazon. And that's that's very important. Second of all, security is woven into our product at kind of every step of the way. You own all your data. No one else owns it. No one else has access to your data or sees it, all of the above. We ran our cloud last year almost at 6 nines, beyond 5 nines, which is well above what anybody could do from an availability perspective. And that includes any kind of security attack, which we get. Every SaaS company gets attacked, whether it's DDoS or whatever it is. And we have been, you know, knock on the proverbial wood, we have been very successful at keeping our system up and running and secure. And we feel very strongly that, you know, we are the leader in that space. We have our customers back. We invest very carefully in security technologies. I have a whole security team that's here working those issues on a daily basis. We pay tremendous attention to it as a SaaS company. But it's also just so, think about what data is in ERP. I mean, it's the most sensitive company data you have, other than perhaps your people, right? because you're thinking about your specific accounts and, you know, how much you're paying to suppliers and, you know, the real size of your company. It's very private. The vast majority of our customers are privately held and often partnerships or family-owned businesses, things like that. And they're very concerned about their data getting in someone else's hands, the wrong person, the wrong time. But our track record of that is very good, and we're continuing to invest. So for us, security is a big part of the promise of the cloud. I mean, I think one of the realizations that other industries have come to, you know, Jim, over time, is they realize that actually it's actually much safer to be in a cloud storage model than to be in an on-prem storage model.
I agree.
ERP is one of the last industries to realize that. That's the transition we're going through right now with you.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think it's a false narrative, the fear of security, because particularly for the mid-market, where your security is going to be far better than the lack of team that they're going to have to be able to manage security. They don't have a cybersecurity team. They don't have those things that are going to protect their server network, because that's being attacked too today.
No,
so you are all having the safeguards in place. And that's, I think that's part of the equation. Now in cloud, I think sometimes folks think that things can't be customized. Can Acumatica be customized to particular things that are manufacturer, distributor, commercial real estate?
I would be surprised. We have thousands of customers. You know, we announced at our summit a year ago, we had crossed the 10,000 customer barrier. I'd be surprised if there was any two customers who had the same deployment.
Okay.
I'm saying that in an extreme way, but I mean it. We have always led from the promise of flexibility and customization. I mean, you can sort of say, what's customization? What's configuration? What's, you know, like there's barriers or tiers to that. But we allow our good partner network, our VARs, and developers who work on the system to do all kinds of work to bring in unique ISVs or specific internal systems that have been created or unique ways that people want to use accounting, international thing, whatever it happens to be. And so we have hundreds of ISVs that connect to the Acumatica system. All of that comes with unique and interesting data. But every customer, more relevantly, every customer has its own view of how they want to track accounts or do project accounting or whatever it is. And we absolutely allow that. Now, what's interesting about our system is that more and more, we're trying to go to sort of what I would call low-code, no-code customization, allow us to run the cloud more efficiently while the customer still gets the benefit of uniqueness. And I think that's a journey we're very much on, and it's a big part of our technology roadmap. But at the same time, the promise is there. We're never going to take away the customer's need or desire to do things that are highly flexible, unique, and contained. And I think that customers often struggle with that journey. They need a great partner, a great VAR to coach them on that journey. And that's what we use our partner channel for. In many ways, that's what our partners are there to do to help the customer. But very much, we believe in a customization model that allows people to do what they need for their business. I had a great customer on stage with me at Summit this year. And the quote he used, which I'm going to use forever, I told him I'm going to steal the quote from him, is that their mantra at his company, a company called Polywood, was, we want to make sure the system fits the business. We don't want to push the business to fit the system. And I actually think that's one of my favorite quotes I've heard in the last 12 months, because that really is our philosophy. Like, I love that philosophy because, you know, he and his team, we're running Acumatica at this big customer, are thinking about it that way. How can they make sure the system is doing what they need to respond to the needs of the business, not the other way around? And that's something that has been in our core from the very beginning.
By the way, I was in the audience, heard that. They were very good. Polywood, great name. So a shout out for Polywood. Yeah, great name. And they were also a fast growing customer, weren't they, if I remember correctly?
Yeah, they had grown by several 100% through the COVID cycle, people ordering outdoor furniture. And they have big seasonal spikes too, which I think makes them even more interesting because the people are, when are they buying outdoor furniture? Right when it starts to warm up on the East Coast and the Midwest, right?
So exactly.
They have these big seasonal spikes and they don't have to staff that. They can do all that through Acumatica, all that with their inventory management and their suppliers. And it's one of the things that makes them a very successful customer.
So having said that, can you give us any other examples of folks who've had great success in growing and scaling the business?
Well, there's dozens of customers like that. And I think you can give you lots of examples. I think a lot of times I hear about examples that are about companies that have added entirely new dimensions to their business, new divisions, new teams, new acquisitions, new locations. And Telesis is one that we talked about also on stage that was a really good example that, you know, it's a 5-division company that was adding, growing, and they had grown again by several 100% the last 5 years. And Acumatica had enabled that. There's great stories like PXG Golf is a great story for me like that. PXG Golf started with us many, many years ago as a very small golf provider. Now they're one of the biggest kind of golf suppliers in the country, and they run Acumatica end to end, including all their retail stores. That's one of my favorite customer stories. There's lots of them like that that realize that the Acumatica engine can really help them fuel their growth. And whether that's manufacturing or construction, you name it, they all have those kinds of examples. The other customer that was on stage at Academic Summit was a company called Portacool, which you probably saw that story too, is a really interesting kind of cooling equipment manufacturer that does things like puts, you know, movable air conditioners into factory floors or sports sidelines, you name it. Same thing. They'd gone through a huge growth wave, and then they had a tragic fire. And it was a really interesting story. They had a fire that burned down their plant. And, you know, we helped them, their VAR helped them really get back up and running. And the system allowed them to basically outsource production for a period of time, bring it back in-house, and start building product again, even through a growth wave. And I get all those stories to me prove that this our business management system can really be the backbone of these fast growing companies.
All right. That was an amazing story that they lost the entire, all their inventory too, didn't they?
They basically burned up a couple months of their supply and their inventory. Yeah.
So everybody's talking about it. You know what I'm going to probably ask about now? AI.
Yeah.
Well, how are you using, incorporating AI in some way, somehow? Tell us.
Yeah. I think AI is a really interesting use case in ERP. I think there are ways it's really underrated and there's ways it's somewhat overrated. I'll kind of hint at some of that. And then I'll kind of talk about our philosophy because our philosophy is fairly specific on this. If you think about the core of ERP and business management, it's transactions, it's accounts, it's, you know, it's gap accounting, it's a ledger, right? And then all the other functions peel off from that ledger. I think that a lot of that feels highly manual today. And it's my belief in a few years that a lot of that will be more automated and AI can help with that. The payroll runs that people start, or the manual entry of a new order, or whatever it happens to be, I think AI can really jumpstart a lot of those, the manual process. So the first big thing I foresee in AI for companies like Acumatica is customers will get great benefit from a smart system that's automated. And so we're trying to build that in, where there's a bunch of ways, we have dozens of projects underway, we're trying to build in automation to make the system smarter so that customers don't have to replicate the same behavior over and over again, or don't have to do the same tasks that feel manual, even though it's still going into a digital system. So that's a big part of it. I think the user interface will get a lot better. You know, I think the ways that you can design reports that you want, or can think about queries that you have into, say, a knowledge base, all that can have a better front end that AI will really, really help. And so I look across what we're doing. I see a lot of projects like that underway where we're experimenting and playing with things. We have been for a few years. It's not a recent thing. Some of that's already finding its way to the hands of customers in places like our community. But I also think that AI is not, it's not an end-all be-all. It isn't the panacea that solves everything. Every company still has uniqueness. Every company still will have a specific way they want to go to market. Every company will have a specific way they want to think about their suppliers or their inventory, whatever it happens to be. And so there's still a lot of it that will get personalized or configured. And AI can't solve that for you. All it can do is give you a faster way down the road. So what I'd like to see in a few years is a system that says, hey, we can do implementations 25% faster. You can change your reports much more rapidly. It gives you more flexibility rather than it does the work for you. And I think that's what's happening. That's what I foresee happening with AI. Now, AI also has a set of, you know, what I would call questions, right? Like, is it safe? Is it secure? We have what we call principles. And we're about to release something we call our principles of innovation. And that's basically saying to the industry, here's how we will treat AI and data, right? But so we have three principles. The first one is, it has to be practical, right? The any AI advance we do has to be something that solves a real world problem for customers. It can't just be something that we do because it sounds interesting and unique, right? And then it has to be responsible, right? Responsible basically means we aren't going to do anything to jeopardize data for the sake of AI, right? We want to treat that data with the safest, most careful hands we can. We have a data model we already believe in. We believe customers own their data, not us. Therefore, you can move it to someone else one day if you wanted to. We will abide by all of that, even in an AI world, okay? And then valuable, like we won't do things again for the sake of an experiment. So like valuable for us, the third principle is basically about, is this something that the market, the industry will find interesting and useful? Like, is it gonna measurably move the value of ERP forward as opposed to, it's just an interesting idea I had, let's play with it. So now to do all that, we have to experiment. We have to try things. We have to use the data that exists. A lot of it is a data challenge more than it is an AI challenge, by the way. Data is the biggest part of the problem, not the answer to everything. But for us, that's how we're approaching the problem. And I do think that all these products will get better. But I also sense, you can look around the industry, you don't see ERP companies touting AI as the next great vision for their product, because they all sort of see the practicalities of it. There is still personalization. There is still configuration that has to take place. It doesn't solve every problem. You're never going to have a fully automated AI system running your accounting. That's just not possible. But can it make the whole thing better? Absolutely. And that's what we believe.
Sarah, did you have any questions you had? I know your eyebrows went up and made me think there's a thought in your head. And by the way, I'm just curious, though. This is John Case, right? This is not a bot, right? You are John. You can prove it.
As far as I know, I'm me. Yeah, that's
okay.
Right.
I have no way of checking, you know.
All right, yeah.
Sarah, I'm sorry.
We're in our new office headquarters here in Kirkland, our temporary office.
Nice. I did have a question actually around, so when we've been talking to customers and other companies, there's really this focus around consolidating their tech stacks right now within this environment. And I know that Acumatica does have some CRM functionality as well. We've been really focused on the ERP discussion today, but anything you can share on that and the strategy there?
Yeah, no, I think that's a great question. I'm glad you brought it up. It all goes back to what I was talking about, one of the earlier questions around sort of an industry-specific model. We do have a CRM tool. We don't sell it standalone. We only sell it with our ERP, right? We have a payroll tool, right? We don't sell it standalone. We only sell it with our ERP. So in each of those industries, what you find is there are things like project management can be very specific to construction or manufacturing, or you know, human resources management, et cetera, et cetera. So more and more what I hear from customers, to your point, Sarah, is people are saying, look, what's my backbone? What's the hub, right? Mm-hmm. And what are the spokes? And some of them, for like our CRM tool, for example, is designed for that kind of company stage and size. It's not going to replace Salesforce at a giant multinational corporation. It's not what it's designed for. It's designed to be a very good, secure, well-integrated CRM tool that plugs into the ERP very deeply. Same with our payroll tool for construction. Same with our, you name it. So all these things. And we have third-party ISV products that do the same things, or in some cases better, or add to our functionality. So what customers tell me is once they make the decision to use Acumatica as that kind of hub, they can pick some of these modules that we have, and it can actually make their whole experience more seamless, or they can go out and do a best of breed strategy, and we give them that kind of optionality. If they want to run Salesforce and have that integration work with Acumatica, great. They want to run Sugar CRM, whatever it is. But if they want to pick the Acumatica CRM, it's there and it can actually be deeply integrated and very well single pane of glass window within the system. We use our own CRM here. I can look up the name of any customer, any partner within my business management tool, in the same reports, looking at the same. So it's an immediate click. I don't have to jump to another app to do it. And some customers find that very attractive. And now, granted, we're not chasing the Salesforces of the world with our CRM functionality. We're building functionality we think suits our customer demographic in the industries like I talked about. And if that's a strategy people want, then that's what we're delivering. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, that was great. Thank you.
No more eyebrows going up for other questions there, Sarah?
You asked a question. I had a thought around the other thing that usually comes up when we're talking, because we've been in the ERP business for quite some time, and we still have customers that are hesitant to make that move from on-prem to a true cloud accounting solution. And data security is one of the common things that we talked about. But any advice for even maybe a champion within a company that's like, understands the value of moving to cloud and how they can communicate that to their CFO?
Yeah, I think, it's a really interesting discussion. I kind of started Acumatica a couple of years ago thinking, okay, all these legacy companies, it's going to be fairly straightforward to persuade them to move. And it turns out that's not the case. That actually companies go through a very logical lifespan where they think about their technology and they think about their digital transformation. And there are lots of reasons why companies move from a legacy platform to a cloud platform, but they're very varied. I mean, it could be end of life of something. It could be the moment that a certain functionality becomes available in the cloud they were waiting for, whatever it is. But the most common scenario is actually because there's someone in the company, whether that's in finance or in some project management system, or even an owner that decides it's time to look at modern tech. And they're already looking at that across their whole kind of technology consolidation, like you thought about it. And there is a champion. And that champion is often, again, in the ownership group or the finance group, often the CFO or maybe the controller. And they've said, there's so much benefit from a cloud ERP system. Shouldn't we be looking at it? A lot of companies will look at it and think about it, come back a year later or a year after that. But when they eventually move, it's because there was that person inside the company that really pushed the button and said, it's time we started thinking about getting the benefits of this. And sometimes it's because their competitors do it and they feel like they're late to the party, or maybe their friends refer them to something. Hey, we switched to this new cloud ERP system and it's been magical for us. And that's a very typical story and one that we would like to replicate. I think that's actually what happens in a lot of these companies. Maybe it's an ownership transition. Maybe it's a new finance person coming in. Maybe it's just, you know, those moments that happen can move very quickly. It can go from, you know, house in a couple months, but it also can take years. And, you know, we have customers at all stages of that journey.
Yeah. I'm going to tell the audience this, that, you know, if you're thinking and you've heard the term digital transformation, well, that's an umbrella term. But part of that transformation is moving to technologies that are cloud-based, that are up to date. You know how many people we know and our clients too are on the old on-prem technologies? Yes, they're probably tried and true, but so wasn't the horse and buggy. And, you know, we need to adapt and move forward. Otherwise, if you're not adapting, you're perhaps dying. So this is a part of your digital transformation as a company. You're getting new tech, you're getting the ability to integrate with completely open systems with, you know, we're going to call them APIs and webhooks, et cetera. So you can really change the face of your company. I just wanted to probably bring this around. Can you tell us any upcoming developments with Acumatica? Something maybe secret that nobody else knows, you know, so I could claim that I got John to tell me.
You know, we do two releases a year, which is how we kind of bring our product to the market. And those two releases are very full of new features and functionality each time. You know, this time around, we have basically the developer preview of our new user interface, which is a really exciting thing we've been working on for several years. We'll really create a much more modern look and feel to our technology. Really separate us from some of the competitors that have been, you know, kind of doing for decades and haven't really refreshed their UI. And will also allow for more flexibility and more design, more personalization of the workspace. And then the second release of the year, that'll actually be fully across the whole system. So customers can actually use the new Acumatica UI fully if they want to, and then some of the ISVs and third parties will catch up. We also have a whole new system coming for Amazon on the commerce side. That's actually a really exciting feature customers have been asking for, particularly distributors and omni-channel companies that want to do more in the go-to-market, and Amazon's part of their core issue. So we have a new kind of way of doing that, fulfilling, looking at inventory in Amazon within Acumatica. You don't have to leave the Acumatica ecosystem. And then lots more happening across, you know, whether it's retail, distribution, manufacturing, construction, every one of those additions has new features and functionality coming out too. But all that, you know, gets into some pretty good detail. But one of the great things about the cloud is we can be refreshing that technology all the time and allows us to stay pretty aggressive with our roadmap.
Right. Well, this has really been great, John, to have you with us. I want folks out there to know that we are thrilled to be a partner. Please come to us if you have questions about Acumatica. We will provide the expertise to help you decide, is it the right time for you to move to cloud? And by the way, it's the right time for everybody to start to transform. The benefits are unbelievable. I don't have a server in the office, so I drink my own champagne. I haven't seen a server in years. And let me tell you how freeing that is.
Yeah.
Right. And I could be in London right now getting into my ERP system. So I said London. It doesn't have to be London. So thank you, John, very much for joining us. Before we leave, tell me one last thing. What was the last business book you've read?
Oh, gosh. I don't tend to read a lot of business books. I tend to read a lot of history books.
All right, let's go with history.
The last history book I read was about the one I'm currently finishing right now is about a World War II invasion of a heavy water factory in Norway that the British came and had to blow up with the Norwegians to keep the Germans from building an atomic bomb at the end of World War II. The one before that was called Boys in the Boat, about the local story. Movie that just came out. So those are the kind of books I read. I get lessons from those. I do occasionally read a business book, but it's pretty rare.
Yeah. Well, I'm a history buff, so I love that stuff. And I love the World War II stuff. I think you and I are probably on the same page there. But our COO, now that you've just said Boys in a Boat, she's going to be all over that because she tells us, you know, that's an analogy for how we run the business. We've all got to be rowing in the same direction.
So. There's management challenges and leadership challenges and organizational challenges in all of those stories.
And everybody in our company has a copy of that book.
They do. So yeah. Great way to end the story here with us, John Case, CEO of Acumatica. John, how would they look you up? How would they find you if they need to? Of course, I can find them too, if you need to find them.
Well, pretty easy to find. You know, my LinkedIn profile is pretty easy to find, and certainly Acumatica is pretty easy to find. But John.Case at Acumatica, people ping me there all the time.
Awesome. John, again, thank you very much. This is Jim Ward, along with Sarah Reed, my co-host. This is the Growth Enablement Madness podcast. I hope you're mad about growing your business as much as we are about helping you grow your business. Thank you. We'll look forward to talking to you again soon, John. You can find this podcast wherever podcasts are found, which is Spotify.
Apple, Google.
Thank you. Right. Awesome. That's it for this episode, and we will be back next month. Thank you for listening to this episode of Growth Enablement Madness Podcast. I also want to thank Divinio Podcast for this episode's production and distribution. Finally, thank you to Sam Ward for our musical introduction and outro. Be sure to check out all of our episodes wherever you listen to your podcasts, including Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and more. New episodes are available monthly and cover all important topics for growing and scaling your business. Until next time, this is Jim Ward signing off. Let's grow.